This is Studio 360. I'm Kurt Anderson. It is a cloudy, humid day, and I'm walking through Lower Manhattan to get to Studio 360. As I climb the steps of our building, a few people call out for help. I don't have time to stop. I need to get up to the office so I can record today's show. But something is blocking the main door. I have no choice but to climb up the side of the building. It's amazing how fast I can go. In about 30 seconds, I've scaled the main facade up to the 25th floor and then shimmied up the narrow round tower on top to our studio on the 30th floor. See, I'm Spider-Man, or at least I am playing the video game based on the movie Spider-Man 3.
You know, fancy outfit, fights crime while swinging from building to building.
The game has created a digital Manhattan that is so full of detail and so amazingly accurate. It actually includes the 1914 office building where I'm sitting right now. And it lets me decide whether to just walk to work or to swing on long strands of spidery goo. Video games are having a huge impact on everything from movies to museum art to military training. But if you haven't seen, let alone played, a video game since Ms. Pac-Man, you probably have some catching up to do. So we're going to make it easy. Here is a quick guided tour of the state of the art. Video Games 101. If you have kids who were born in the last 10 or 20 years, they almost certainly play video games, so you already know that some of today's games look really cool. 12-year-old Nick Nat Mullen is smitten by Super Smash Bros. Melee.
This is probably my, no doubt, favorite game ever.
Melee features Nintendo stars like Mario and Zelda, and it looks like a stiffly animated cartoon. Nick moves one of the characters with his handheld controller. Like most games, Melee has a story behind all the mayhem, something about a kid throwing a trophy at another trophy and then the other trophy attacking.
Plots aside here, you just battle. Now, you battle by pressing either A.
Nick says he plays video games 2 hours a day, every day, and he's pretty clear-eyed about why he likes them.
For one, they help me escape into a world where I can do nearly anything. When I'm playing Metroid games, I can pretend I'm this really cool intergalactic bounty hunter fighting evil space pirates with great weapons like beams and bombs and grapple hooks and all this types of stuff. Suddenly, I'm not in reality as just a normal seventh grade student.
Escapism, yes. Control issues, yes. But antisocial? No way, Nick says.
Most types of kids right now are social gamers. Usually it's the adults that are the crazed addicts who just sit in their basement and play.
You spin, you shoot somebody in the head, then, you know, there's someone behind you, and instead of getting clocked by them, you hit them with the butt of your rifle and then back off, switch weapons to something that's close range and shoot them. 2, 3, 4, 5 kills in a row. It's just really exhilarating.
No, he says he's not a crazed addict either. This is Dimitri Detsiridis, 29 years old. Amazingly, the exact median age of gamers, according to the industry. Dimitri plays Halo 2 live on the internet with people all over the country, maybe all over the world, who have hooked up their Xboxes to the internet.
All right, let's keep at least 2 sets of eyeballs on this bomb location. We got company.
The headset he's wearing lets him talk with his teammates as they hunt down the enemy through the corridors and stairwells of a gigantic space station.
Damn it. Kill everyone on your own team. Very clever.
If you think these games are all about space stations and monsters, no. There are also sporting games like Madden NFL and contemporary action games like Grand Theft Auto. Then there are computer games, the kissing cousin to video games. Computer games tend to be less action-oriented. The Sims, for instance, has been a best-selling computer game for years, even though you don't win or lose at all. Instead, you play God in a dollhouse world that you've built yourself. Sims doesn't tell you what to do, just how you can do it. When Cheryl Rogers started playing The Sims, she designed a nice, racially mixed neighborhood of upwardly mobile families.
They got really, really boring. And it felt almost like I was babysitting them. So I decided to build a whorehouse.
Part of the fun is that Sims characters have a certain amount of what seems like free will. So they often behave like real people.
And the men started coming to her house. I didn't tell them to. They were just sort of... Now, I know it's built into the game, but these men, they came and they stayed. The women left.
Sims games sometimes last for years, but not Cheryl's prostitute.
She died in a tragic cooking accident. But, you know, in the game world, if you don't save it, it never happened. So I just didn't save the game.
Curtis Fox produced our tour. I'm Kurt Anderson in Studio 360, and joining me now is Clive Thompson, who writes about games and technology for Wired magazine and the New York Times. He was 10 years old when Pong first came out, and he's been gaming, I guess, pretty fanatically ever since then?
Yeah, I definitely say so. A little oddly enough, a little less fanatically since I started writing about them, because I'm so busy trying to get around to look at all these games, I haven't got enough time to get obsessed with any one of them.
In the last 10 or 20 years, as the game industry and phenomenon have really exploded, have the games gotten better or just flashier?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And there is no sure way to prompt a huge argument amongst a bunch of gamers by asking them, are games better than they used to be or worse? Definitely, I think they're as good as they've ever been and as bad as they've ever been. Because if you walked into an arcade 20 years ago, you know, there were some great games. You know, you had stuff like Pac-Man, you had stuff like Tempest, and there were some just horrible games. I mean, stuff that was being cranked out by these knockoff companies in Japan, and they were wretched, horrible games that just stole your money and made you feel bad. Same type of thing today. Better graphics, but I can pick up a game that's fantastic, like Halo, or I can pick up something that is really, really bad. So merely having better graphics doesn't make a game better.
And let's get a little more into that. When you say there are great games today like Halo, What makes it great?
Well, Halo is a game where basically you are a sort of space marine, and there's these aliens that you're trying to fight, and you're trying to get to the end of a long mission. And that's one way to play it. Another way to play it is not to fight against a computer with the missions, but to fight against your friends. And what makes this good? It's often little things. Like it's the balance between how powerful the enemies are and how powerful you are. If it's a really uneven balance, it can be too easy to blow them away, and those games can be boring. This one has an excellent balance. It also has very good artificial intelligence, which is to say, you could start a campaign, and I've got to get across this field full of fire, and I could sort of go off to the right, I could go off to the left, I could do a bonsai charge right to the middle, and I could see what happens. But I could replay that a bunch of different times, and something different would happen every time because the artificial intelligence of the enemies is very well done, and they react in very surprising ways. So that is another thing that makes that game particularly good.
And when a game is good, is it programmers who have made it good by making good artificial intelligence, or is it also the writers who wrote the story and the narrative and the characters?
Well, games are becoming these very, very sophisticated things. I mean, a game now will cost several million or even tens of millions to make, and what you're paying for are a bunch of, you know, programmers who just work on physics modules to make it so when those balls bounce, they bounce correctly, and a bunch of writers who do dialogue. Good dialogue is really important. I mean, there's a whole sort of, you know, B class of voice actors who do this stuff, and when they're good, it's really noticeable. When they're bad, it's atrocious. It's like watching a, you know, kung fu film from the 70s. And one of the things that, and people talk about the Grand Theft Auto games as being really popular because of the sort of, you know, gangsta-like violence, but I think it actually has more to do with the fact that they were the first games that were very open-ended, where you could just, yeah, you could abandon the idea of a mission and let's just wander around and explore the city. And at the same time, they had really amazing voice acting, because you're walking down the street and you just pass someone, you hear a snippet of conversation, and it's so funny, you want to stop and just listen in. So it's the little details like that that make these worlds genuinely fun to explore, sometimes even more fun than your real world.
And in general, do you see, as somebody who goes to movies and somebody who looks at a lot of games, an influence on motion pictures from the style or technique or sensibility of games?
Absolutely. I mean, the whole bullet time thing in The Matrix was very much inspired by the types of things you see in video games, the idea that reality is sort of plastic. And so an aesthetic like that is very much a video game aesthetic. And you see it a lot in movies now. You see the poses, the way the guys hold the guns, the way they move, the types of car crashes and explosions. You know, everyone has always talked about games becoming like movies, but the reverse is also happening. Movies are becoming like games.
Good thing? Bad thing?
Yeah, I think it's a great thing. I mean, I think that video games have been, in many ways, the nice thing about them is that they're a completely open slate. They're a great imaginative space because you can make a world that sort of behaves any way you want. You know, in some ways, I think that a lot of game makers don't push things far enough. They sort of, because they're trying to model realism, they don't really let their imaginations go far enough.
You want more magical realism.
Absolutely. I mean, there are definitely good games like that. But in the mainstay, everyone's been so obsessed with realism that it's sort of overtaken the aesthetic of games in a way that to me is a little bit of a lost opportunity.
Clive Thompson, a journalist on the Video Game Beat, is my guest today. We'll be back in a moment to learn about fighting the war in Iraq on an Xbox.
I might have stepped on a landmine and that a dog was coming out to get me anyway. Maybe the landmine was a better way to go.
That's ahead in Studio 360 from PRI, Public Radio International. Stay with us.